This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from the Blue Cliff Record, case 31. Maku carrying his ring staff, the pointer. Move and a shadow appears. Become aware and ice forms. Yet if you don't move and are not aware, you'll not avoid entering into the wild fox cave. If you can enter thoroughly, trust completely, without a hair of blinding obstruction, you'll be like a dragon finding water, like a tiger taking to the mountains. Let go, and even tiles and pebbles emit light. Hold still, and even real gold loses its color. The ancients' public cases could not avoid being roundabout. But tell me, what were they discussing? To test, I cite this old case. Look. Maku, carrying his ring staff, went to Master Chang Ching. He circled the meditation seat three times, shook his staff once, and stood there, upright. Chang Ching said, "Correct, correct." Zuedo added a word saying, "Wrong." Maku then also went to Nanchuan. He circled the meditation seat three times, shook his staff, and stood there, upright. Nanchuan said, "Incorrect, incorrect." Zuedo added a word saying, "Wrong." Maku then said, "Chang Ching said correct. Why do you say incorrect, Master?" Nanchuan said, "Chang Ching is correct. It's you who are incorrect. This is what is turned about by the power of the wind. In the end, it breaks down and disintegrates." The verse. This wrong and that wrong, it's important not to take them away. Then the waves are calm in the four seas. The hundred rivers return to the ocean tide. The standard of the ancient rod is lofty with 12 gates. In each gate, there's a road, empty and desolate. Not desolate. The adept should seek medicine without disease. So this weekend, we're concluded an instructor retreat in which we've been examining different this sort of foundational aspects of the teachings and the practices that arise out of those teachings that are intended to reveal and bring us to realization of those teachings. This ongo, we're studying the Eightfold Path, which is the heart of the Buddha Dharma. It is what makes this path this path. And so this morning I wanted to present this koan as a way of talking about this particular aspect of training within Buddhism being so much about the meditation path, and over these many, many hundreds of years having developed meditation throughout all of these many generations within different lineages, different schools, different countries, all to serve one purpose: to bring us to realize our self nature, to recognize the nature of suffering, and in that our liberation from suffering. And so the koan is an important aspect of the Zen tradition that is, even within the Zen tradition, is not practiced the same throughout, and not even always within different sanghas or lineages. In which the koan presents a moment of phenomena, a moment of reality. If we're going to understand how do we live in this world freely, without hindrance, without obstruction, then we have to simultaneously turn towards this world that we live in, because this is where we're working it out. And at the same time, turn towards the fundamental, because otherwise we're just in the same world we've always been in, and nothing new is seen. And so how do we simultaneously turn towards our fundamental nature, turned towards that which is beyond any idea and concept, and our ability to make contact with our senses, so that we realize that fundamental nature of self and all things, and at the same time do that within phenomena, so that our lives actually are transformed. And in that way, the world is transformed. And so the koan gives an incredible way of doing that, all within one's meditation, or at least that's where it begins. And in the pointer, he says, the ancients' public cases, a koan means public case, a public presentation. The ancients' public cases could not avoid being roundabout. Because as soon as you speak, as soon as you point to something, in our mind, that becomes objectified, solidified, it becomes something. And we think, oh, it's that. And the whole vast, boundless world in our mind becomes reduced to one thing, just another object. And yet, we have to point. Teachers have to point. They have to point to something that we can turn our attention to. The teachings, a practice, a prostration, the breath, an altar, a situation, a relationship. But how to do that without getting tangled in our mind. And so he says they couldn't avoid being roundabout, but after all, what were they discussing? What is it about after all? And in the pointer, he kind of lays out what happens in practice. Move, and a shadow appears. And so where we begin is to see that every time the slightest movement happens, within and without, our mind gets stuck. It gets caught on things. I remember practicing at home on my own for years before I came here, and just, you know, a speck of smudge on the wall, right? Or if I was sitting facing the floor, just the grain of wood would become an epic story, right? My mind would catch on that and get hooked in that. And of course, it wasn't in the grain of wood. It wasn't the smudge on the wall. It was my mind. And nothing was even moving but my mind. How much more so when there was sound or activity? The first time I came here to sit, I thought, why doesn't everybody just stop everything? Why isn't there absolute stillness, absolute quiet? Why don't we have a perfectly, absolutely controlled environment to compensate for my concentration, which is not very strong, which was really what I was asking for without even knowing it. But then I realized that's not going to help me. It's not going to help me as soon as movement occurs and shadows appear. And so it's really talking about what happens in the very beginning. And so our senses get enchanted, our thoughts begin to move, meaning gets imputed into whatever we're experiencing, and the rest, everything that follows, is literally what we call history. The story of us and our world. But that as we practice, that shifts. Patterns and habits of mind begin to quiet. The emotions, the turbulence of the emotions, are clinging to those movements begins to shift, to settle, to find their natural resting place. Awareness develops, gets stronger. We stop and turn inward, take that backward step. And so then he says, when we become aware, now ice forms. So when our awareness really becomes very strong and still, the waves calm, the streams dry up, the body becomes light and porous, the mind can't be found. Clinging, our objects of clinging, our ideas that fuel our clinging, the fear underlying our clinging begins to be freed. But what he's saying is ice forms, that within that frozen landscape, and winter is often used as an image to point to the absolute, where the movement stops, the self is not arising, our mind is not producing dualities. Ice appears. So within that stillness, things become a little frozen. Not yet free. And so he says, but if you don't move, and you're not yet aware, you won't avoid entering into the wild fox cave. And so how do we develop all that needs to be developed and not cling at anything? How do we step forward? How do we let go and then let go of letting go? How do we calm this incessant movement of the mind and then go beyond that and realizing the movement is not a problem? How do we not put empty space into a golden cage? How do we not create our sadness and call that joy? The wild fox cave is a place where we seem very clever. It seems that we're free, but we're still bound to something. Sometimes what we're bound to is an idea of nothing. And so he says, if you can enter thoroughly, trust completely, without a hair blinding obstruction, then you'll be like a dragon finding water, like a tiger in the mountains. You'll be in your natural state, in your natural place. And really what he's talking about here is the liberation from the sense of dualities, of opposites, which is expressed over and over again in the teachings as being and non-being, self, not self, sacred, mundane, enlightened, deluded, heaven and hell. When we let go, he says, even tiles and pebbles, ordinary things, things we've never regarded, emit light. When we hold on, even things that have great beauty, great power, lose their color. They're diminished. And so, how is all of this in real life? Because that's all it's about. You know, it's really important with the language and the poetry and these metaphors and the allusions to dragon finding water and a tiger taking to the mountains. He's talking about us. How do we be that dragon, that enlightened being, finding our water? Because the water is where the dragon is at home. The mountain is the place where the tiger is most free. We should never forget that all of the language is pointing to our lives. So here, Maku, who was a Dharma brother of Nanquan, and both had studied with Matsu. So this is a very lively time in the development of Zen. It's late 8th, early 9th century China. So they were Dharma brothers. Changqing was a contemporary master, but of a different lineage. And so here Maku is carrying his ring staff, which was a staff similar to what I have in the Doksan room, Hojin Sensei has in the Daisan room. It's a part of one of the objects received in transmission. Ours don't have rings on the top, but traditionally when the monastic would go traveling, they would carry a staff just to help find their way. And the 12 rings at the top both make sound to frighten off frightening, scary creatures, but also to remind them, the traveler, of the 12 links of dependent origination, which was sort of the foundational revolutionary teaching that the Buddha brought directly out of his own enlightenment about how, based in an initial state of delusion, of not understanding, the whole, as he called it, the whole mass of suffering, the whole world of confusion and greed and anger and fear and insecurity and conflicts and so on comes into being, rather predictably. And so those rings with every step, ring, is reminding the traveler of that fundamental truth. And so he comes to Changqing's place. He circles the meditation seat three times, shakes the staff, and stands there upright. And so the student working with this koan first has to understand this action. And in the development of Zen, there were many questions that became sort of foundational questions. What is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? Right? Which seems like kind of an abstract question, but it was basically a way of saying, what is the fundamental truth? What is Dharma? What is real? But it was asking it in a kind of formulaic way, in a more embellished way. And there were actions that you see appearing again and again in the koans, in dialogues, in the literature, that a practitioner or a monastic or a teacher might bring forth. And the same thing continues to this time, to polish the mind, to help to see, to present one's understanding. And so here Maku is presenting something. There is a formal way of entering when you enter into a monastery, a formal way of acknowledging the abbot. This isn't it. He's doing something here that is not following the protocol. So what is he presenting? Well, he's clearly testing himself. He's presenting his understanding, but he's also testing Changqing. So what is that gesture? Master Dogen says, actualizing Buddha ancestors, bringing Buddha to life, is reality thoroughly experienced. We speak of this as suchness, as thusness, as isness. Reality is all things. All things are reality thusness. And then to help us understand, what is he talking about? He says, original nature, thusness, body, thusness, mind, thusness, world, thusness, cloud and rain, thusness, cloud and rain, reality thoroughly experienced. Walking, standing, sitting, and lying down, thusness, reality thoroughly experienced. Sadness, joy, motion, stillness, reality thoroughly experienced. Staff and whisk, thusness. When all things are all things, there is reality thusness, original nature thusness. When reality is reality, there is reality thusness, original nature thusness. When all things are all things, versus when all things are separated and distinct and put into categories and set apart and opposed to each other. In another fascicle, he says, the great way of all Buddhas, thoroughly practiced, thoroughly experienced, is emancipation, liberation, and realization. Emancipation means that in life, you're emancipated from life, emancipated within life. And in death, you're emancipated from death and within death. Thus, there is detachment from birth and death and entering into birth and death. Such is the complete practice of the Great Way. There is letting go of life and death, and there is vitalizing life and death. Such is the thorough practice of the Great Way. And here he's speaking poetically about the essence of the Buddha Dharma. There is letting go of all of our worldly concerns, of relationship, of emotion, of thought, of activity, of consequence and action. To realize the fundamental nature. And then there is moving forward into each and everything, within life, liberated in life, within death, liberated in death. And so Changqing is presenting his understanding. Everything we do in practice is about this. And so the question for the student what is this action? Is it true? Or is it deluded? The action itself is true. Is Maku true in doing it? Is he just mimicking something he's seen? Is he experiencing this thoroughly? Is he emancipated? in this action. Dogen has already presented all of these different forms of thusness. And he just stopped, because otherwise he would still be enumerating, because it's infinite. But the question of whether it's true for Maku is not the most important question. For the student working on this question, it's, is it true for you? Because we're not here to be concerned about Maku, this master of 9th century China. Changqing, seeing this, says, correct, correct. And Zuedo is the teacher who many years later compiled all of these koans together in this collection called the Blue Cliff Record and wrote verses, the verse for each. And so he's, as he's presenting this koan, this dialogue, he's inserting himself. He's calling out from the side, wrong. Changqing has just said correct, and he's calling out wrong. And the footnote to that, which was presented by yet another teacher who presented commentaries and footnotes, this wealth of teaching basically around this one koan, said that when Changqing, when Maku came in and circled and stood upright, he says he bursts forth and startles the heavens and stirs the earth. Everything rumbles with this action. That's how powerful it is. When Changqing says wrong or correct, the footnote says, what is this? A donkey tethering stake. This correct. Why is it a donkey tethering stake? So you have to enter into that. What is that? Well, if you tether a donkey to a stake, it can't move. It's tethered. It's stuck there. And so what Yan Wu, the commentator, is saying is this correct is like a stake that we get tethered to. I mean, just think about it. When you ask a question and the teacher says, very good question, what happens inside? Right? Right? In that moment, something is given birth to, right? Something develops. When the teachers happened in one of my music classes in college, when the teacher asked a question and everybody was intimidated by him, so nobody answered. And I thought, I'm here to get an education, so I'm going to answer. And I presented my answer, and he looked at me. Then he went up to the board and drew a very, very tiny zero, which was his sense of humor, although he didn't make it easy to know that was his sense of humor. It took me a while to realize that was his humor. So, of course, that's what we're afraid of. Right? Nobody wants to be wrong. So how do we become liberated, emancipated from and within a world of right and wrong? Because make no mistake about it, there is right and wrong in this world, and we need to know the difference. And that's a big part of what practice is about, is being able to recognize. And based in what? How do we discern? How do we know? Particularly in such complex circumstances we find ourselves in. Changqing calls out, correct. Suedo says, wrong. Now, these are very highly developed masters. They're not playing around. Was one of them right and one of them wrong? Were they both right? If they were both right, then why does Yan Wu say wrong? What's going on? How do we use words? How do we use a situation like that, correct, wrong, to free ourselves from right and wrong in a way that's true? There's a tension in practice. There are many, many dynamic, essential tensions that exist within practice, which are basically tensions that exist within dualities. And so there's a basic tension in formal training where we enter in as students at the beginning, and we're here to learn. And we have to have faith, right? We have to have some faith in the teachings, or else this is not our practice. If we don't have faith in the teachings, this is not our practice. We need to find teachings that we can have faith in. Having that faith, then we can practice. If we study with a teacher, we have to have trust in that teacher, right? Because we're coming to them for guidance. We're asking for the teachings. If we don't have that trust, that person is not our teacher. How much trust do you need to have? Enough. Enough. And so there is that need to have that faith, to go to a teacher and ask a question, to present our understanding. And at the same time, you have to trust yourself. Because otherwise, we become blind to ourselves. We're not actually developing the Dharma within ourselves. We're just relying wholly on our attachment to somebody else's understanding, which is not going to go well. And so this tension between trusting ourselves from the very beginning and all the way through, and developing that trust and building confidence at the same time that we continue to be students and have student mind and seek the teachings. And so in such a moment, how does Maku know? Right? Because the next moment, he goes to Nanchuan's place. Another master does the same thing, and Nanchuan says, wrong. And so, as the dialogue makes clear, he's confused. Changqing said, correct, you say wrong. And so the koan, this koan is excellent in bringing the student right to the place where, one, we get stuck. Tell me, am I right or am I wrong? Is this true or not true? Am I okay or not okay? And at the same time, makes it clear that we are dependent upon each other. That if I am only trusting myself, what is it that I'm trusting? Right? So when something happens and I respond spontaneously, is that wisdom or is that just a conditioned pattern? Is that clarity or confusion? How do I know? When I think I'm presenting something that is true based in my experience, and the teacher says, no, that doesn't reach it. Keep going. I mean, I remember this happening where I would sit with a koan and have an experience that felt powerful and insightful and transformative, and I would go into my teacher. This happened on a number of occasions. And I would present it, and he said, nope, keep working. And I would like, how could that be? And he said, you haven't seen it. That's how it can be. Go back to your seat. And I realized the first time that happened that something had happened on my cushion that seemed powerful and transformative, and I had not seen the koan. And both of those were true. And there were also times where I had experiences that seemed true, and when I brought them into my teacher, he said, you're heading off in a wrong direction. That's not going to help you. How do we know? And so that tension is really, really important. Because when it's not attention, we're camping out on one side or the other. Right? It feels right to me, so I'm going with it. Right? I can't trust myself, so you tell me. This path is much more interesting than that. And it demands much, much more. I mean, it helps us to see why we have such a proclivity to attaching to one side or the other, because it seems to create certainty and safety. I just, you know, this is my story. I'm sticking with it. I don't have to deal with anything else. But it doesn't work. It And so when he says to enter thoroughly and trust completely, that itself is a journey, is the journey. No one enters thoroughly in the beginning. No one trusts completely. That's why, how much trust do you need to have? Enough. Enough to be here. Enough to get onto that cushion. Enough to persist for one more moment. That's how much you need. For now. They may not be enough for the long term, but for now, that's enough. I remember years ago we were doing a retreat downstairs, and a student asked, how are karmic obstructions created? In other words, how are these patterns established? And I said, what a ridiculous question. And then I said, that's how. That's how. In that moment, what happens in the mind? In that moment, what comes into being? Right? What seeds deep within us does that pull up and confirm again? Not enough, not whole, lacking. And how else can we know? How else can we find our way except in those very moments? That's why he says in the poem, this wrong and that wrong, it's important not to take them away. Yasthana Rishi said we have to test our practice, we have to practice, first of all, then we need to test it with the teachings. So you go back to the teachings over and over, and is this in alignment? Is this matching? Am I on the right track? And then you test it in your life, which means just show up. You will be tested. And we see those moments where we are not moving forward without a hair of blinding obstruction. We are blinded. We are obstructed. And that is showing us there's something that is not yet clear. There's not something that is not yet let go of. There's something that I don't yet understand. That's the meaning of that, if we're seeking meaning. You know, that's why it's important to appreciate that Buddhism is not talking about, you know, whether you are worthy or unworthy of anything. The Buddha established that decisively in his enlightenment. We each have Buddha nature. We each are complete. We each are that being who is thoroughly experienced and emancipated from the beginning. What we direct our attention to is the degree to which we are living that, how we manifest that in our mind, in our thoughts, in our words and actions. When Maku went to Nanchuan and went through the same, presented the same understanding, and Nanchuan said, incorrect, incorrect. The footnote says, as before, Maku is washing of clod of earth in the mud. Right. So what is that image? You're trying to wash earth within a bath of mud. Again, he bursts forth, but though the frog leaps, he can't get out of the basket. So the first time he says he startles the heaven and stirs the earth, and now he says he's a frog in a basket, he can't get out. So what is happening here? And this is where the student enters in and becomes that moment, is in that moment, is experiencing. Really, if we just understand his gesture, the rest of the koan is clear. Sometimes that's presented as, if you lift up one corner of a carpet, of a mat, if you lift up one corner, the other three corners will become clear. Really, everything else that's following in the koan and the commentary and the poem is really coming back to, do we understand that moment? that's what Chongqing and Nanchuan and Zuedo and Yanwu are trying to bring out and make clear. That is where that tension between, do I trust myself? Do I trust the teacher? Do I trust the Dharma? Is clarified. In other words, it's not done theoretically, it's not done conceptually. And we can do that in practice. We practice and something happens, something shifts in our practice, it seems to open up, and it's like, okay, what did I just do? And we try and turn that into a formula. Okay, if I just do that every time. You know, so maybe when you sat down this time, you rocked back and forth. And then you had this great period of zazen. It's like, okay, do that every time. And it doesn't work,
right?
Because life doesn't... We can apply formulas to many things, but life itself is not a formula. The Dharma, that's why I said, the Buddha has no fixed form. We have lots of forms that we use, but none of them are to be fixed. To not take away this right and that, this wrong and that wrong. Chongqing says, why do you say incorrect, Master? Nanchuan said, Chongqing is correct. It's you who are wrong. This is what is turned about by the power of the wind. In the end, it breaks down and disintegrates. And the question, of course, is what is this? What is happening here? What is Maku seeking? How is he stumbling? Where is the power? How do we find what we're seeking? And how does it develop into some, not certainty, nothing fixed, but how does it develop into, or how do we in a sense reclaim this as our natural birthright? It is not a thing, it's not an idea. No one can give it to us and no one can take it away. But it is our birthright. It is our very nature. And all of practice is simply to reveal that to us. Because he says, in this way, then the waves are calm in the four seas, and all of the many rivers, all of the streams, all of the 10,000 things, all of the complications return to the ocean tide. And he says in the footnote, clean and naked, peace and tranquility in your own home. The sea is at rest, the rivers are clear. Serene, peaceful, tranquil, clean and naked in your own home. And the Buddha said in his own teaching, keep your house in order. Very simple instruction. Keep your house in order. And we can understand in the sense of the all of the details of our life, you know, all of our responsibilities, our obligations, because when those are in order, we can be more calm. When they're not in order, we're anxious. We worry. But of course, ultimately, he's talking about our true home. How do we bring that into order? And so he says, those rings, those 12 gates, every link in which our mind is engaged that moves from a beginning understanding, which is not clear, to all of the difficulty and challenge in our lives. He says every link, every moment, every step is a road empty and desolate. When we examine it clearly, we realize there is nothing fixed. There is nothing inherent within anything that has the power to obstruct or to liberate. That's how powerful our mind is to create that sense of something happening. The footnote says, there is not a single thing. This belies your everyday life, right? Because when we look at our everyday life, it seems like there's a whole lot going on that is solid and fixed and has power and is happening to me. So he's saying this fundamental truth seems to belie our ordinary experience. And that's why the Buddha said we will need courage, because when we face the reality, it's natural to experience fear. When we sit and go inward, it's natural to have moments of nervousness, of wavering. Because on some level, we realize we're on a precipice, right? Of possibility, of shift, of a greater freedom. And actually, that scares us. And then he goes on to say, not desolate. Not desolate. There's a story where a master called, someone, a scholar, called on another master. And he asked, do the mountains, rivers, and earth exist or not? Do the Buddhas of the three times exist or not? Everything is empty. Nothing is inherently existent. Isn't that so? And the master said, they exist. And the scholar said, wrong. And the master said, who have you seen? Where have you been? Who's been filling your head with Dharma? And the scholar said, I've seen this master, Qingshan. Whatever I asked about, Qingshan said, it doesn't exist. And so the teacher he's talking to says, what family do you have? Tell me about your family. And the scholar said, I have a wife and two children. And the master said, what family does your former teacher have? And the scholar says, Qingshan is an ancient Buddha. You shouldn't slander him, master. In other words, he's a celibate monk. You shouldn't ask what family he has. And then the teacher says, wait till you are like him. Then I'll tell you everything doesn't exist. Wait until you know that what that means for yourself. And then we can talk about not existing. And then he says at the end, the adept should seek medicine without disease. In other words, if we're going to seek a path, it should be a true path. If we're going to practice Dharma, it should be true Dharma. If we're going to have faith, it should be based in that which is trustworthy. If we're going to practice, it should be sincere practice. Otherwise, what's the point? How much sincerity do you need to have? Enough. Enough. And then as Dogen said, if you live this, do all that you can to live it thoroughly experienced, thoroughly practiced. Emancipation means that in this very life, you are liberated within this very life. And in your dying and death, you are emancipated within that dying and death. And that great aspiration and great liberation resides within every step. And so that great mountain, right, of Dharma, of teaching, of practice, of liberation, comes to what do we do today? What do we do now? And what do we do in the perfect life that you already have, which is perfect in its imperfections, in its challenges? how is it perfect? This wrong and that wrong, they should not be taken away, right? But they should be practiced. And we can find our non-attachment and our freedom within them. And within them, shift occurs. And within that, we can also step forward to change the world. And to understand that in every way that we need to understand that, which is not about control, but it is about change. It is not about fulfilling our expectations, but it is about seeing clearly what is right and what is wrong. So, you know, if we struggle with the teachings, that's just about right. If we don't struggle to understand these teachings, we're not really paying attention. They are difficult to understand because they're taking on the whole thing. They leave nothing out. And they are challenging us to have great aspiration. They are saying to us, you are that person. I am that person. And they also recognize that where we are in this moment, yes, yes, this is where we are in this moment. In our stumbling, in our standing, yes, of course. Don't be surprised.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma Talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.